It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and now the story of how the biggest real estate deal in American history went bad. You probably remember that $5.4 billion sale of Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village in 2006, and the twists and turns that eventually led to a default in 2010. And the reason you probably remember the story, even if you're not a Stuytown Peter Cooper Village resident, is that Charles Bagley covered every inch of it for the New York Times. He has a new book out on the deal gone bad and how it became the poster child for the housing crisis. The book is called Other People's Money, Inside the Housing Crisis and the Demise of the Greatest Real Estate Deal Ever Made. Charles Bagley, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And just to jog people's memory on the details, MetLife sold Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village, all those 110 buildings, 11,232 apartments on those 80 acres overlooking the East River just above 14th Street, for a whopping $5.4 billion in 2006 to real estate giant Tishman Speyer. 4 years later, they defaulted, losing billions for their investors. What is the status of Stuytown, Peter Cooper Village now? Is it still the rent-stabilized middle-class haven that it's long been?
Well, Brian, it's actually at a tipping point right now. About half of the units are at or near market rents. And so that means about, 5,600 units cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $4,200 for a two-bedroom apartment. That's not something that's affordable to the middle class. The people that are living in these apartments tend to be students or young professionals. They're not setting down roots. They're not going to raise their families there. They're going to be there for a couple of years and they'll move on. So this gem in the city that has been a refuge for the middle class for 65 years is fast becoming something else. And we're losing that gem, which I think is as important as Rockefeller Center, Central Park, or the Chrysler Building.
And really, the old owners, MetLife, started taking advantage pretty quickly of that rent stabilization reform law that was passed in Albany in 1997 that allowed market rents for rent stabilized apartments if they were renovated to a certain degree when they became vacant, when a current tenant moved out. So that flip had started to happen.
Yes. At the time of the sale, about a quarter of the units, a little more than a quarter of the units, were market rate or close to market rate. But one thing that MetLife didn't do was send out a lot of eviction notices. And Tishman Speyer, of course, they came in and they deluged the place with notices. And that sort of metastasized. I mean, it helped people or exacerbated the feeling that they wanted to push out longtime residents in favor of higher paying tenants.
And the big price tag was central to that, because if somebody was going to pay $5.4 billion for Stuytown Peter Cooper Village, they had to make that money back in order to make their profit. The presumption was that they were going to up the pressure on tenants to leave and on future tenants to pay as much as they could possibly get out of them.
Absolutely. I mean, you start at the beginning here. The income from the property only covered 40% of the mortgage payment. So they had to make up the difference quickly somehow. And they expected to be able to convert apartments to market rate at a rapid clip, a clip that no one had ever achieved in the city. It's interesting today, here we are, 7 years after the sale of the property, and they still don't have enough income to pay the mortgage, the original $3 billion mortgage. There was another $1.4 billion in secondary loans. But to me, it's amazing. They still don't make the nut.
So residents of Stuytown, Peter Cooper, you want to weigh in? Curious to hear, regardless of how long you've lived there, how you think this sale and this whole saga that we're talking about has affected your life and your neighborhood before or after 2006, 212-433-WNYC, to get that perspective. People listening, I know we have listeners right now. in some of those many buildings. So you can call up and weigh in on this history from your apartment's window, 212-433-WNYC, or anybody else who wants to weigh in on the bigger picture. And there is an even bigger picture, as reflected in the subtitle of Charles Bagley's book, Other People's Money, Inside the Housing Crisis and the Demise of the Greatest Real Estate Deal Ever Made. I want to get to the Bloomberg aspect of this. You do this a lot in the book. The role that the Bloomberg administration played, as well as the role of Dan Gorodnick, a city councilman and resident of Stuytown. What was the administration's role in the initial stages of the sale in 2006? This is an administration that came in, advertising that they were going to create 160,000 new units of affordable housing. What was their stance toward Tishman Speyer when the sale that presumably threatened a lot of rent-stabilized housing was announced?
At the very moment the sale – news of the sale broke, which was Labor Day weekend in 2006, the city's housing commissioner seemed very concerned and wanted to weigh in on this. The question was, how were they going to do it? And that, thus a big debate began within the administration of how to respond. But the mayor went over their heads, or since that's where he sits, and was saying, we don't want to interfere in a private transaction. But this was never a private transaction. One-fifth of the land came from the city. They got a spectacular 25-year property tax exemption. And the city used one of its most powerful tools, eminent domain, to create Stuyvesant Town. So what they eventually said was, well, we could build two units of affordable housing in Queens for every one unit we could save in New York. And ultimately
– in Manhattan.
Yes, in Manhattan.
Just for the sake of our listeners in the other four boroughs, not to confuse with Manhattan with New York, because they'll jump all over you. Anyway, go ahead.
So they sat on the sidelines, and I think in hindsight we can see that we're losing the ability the middle class is losing the ability to live in Manhattan every day. This trend is continuing. And actually creating affordable housing in, say, Queens is much more expensive. It's always going to be more expensive to build new affordable housing than to save existing housing.
And they really had so much of the political establishment behind them for this questionable sale. Even Democratic progressive Elliot Spitzer, who was running for governor at the time on a Change Everything platform. As you say, this was the fall of 2006. So he was the Democratic nominee for governor, and of course he would be elected that November. And he said this on this show as a candidate about that proposed deal when I asked him.
I know that the Tishman Speyer Company is a great tenant and participant in the New York real estate community. They are very interested in the long-term economic success of New York City, which means they have a long-term interest in keeping the middle class here. So I am confident that they will handle the situation with great sensitivity.
Was that too generous looking back? And I don't know if you've ever heard that clip or Spitzer say anything like that before from those days. Was that too confident that they wouldn't do anything to hurt the middle class and would handle the situation with great sensitivity?
Well, whether they wanted to or not, I don't think they had a choice. They had an enormous amount of debt on the property, and they had to do something to try to raise revenue, or else this was going to spin out of control, and of course it did. I would say that this was doomed from the very first day. When you run the numbers and you look at it and you say that this is just never going to work, they were hoping that everything would go right, and of course nothing goes right all the time. The history of real estate in New York is boom and bust. So the downfall was certain.
Let's hear from the hood. Lisa in Peter Cooper Village, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm just calling in because I've lived here for a really long time. My family's been here 50-plus years. So I've seen this complex go from amazingly beautiful private a place where families raised their children. It was affordable. Everyone took care of everything. The grass was perfect. The grounds beautiful. The maintenance amazing. And the people who lived here mostly cared about the complex and everything that occurred. Now, with this change and over the last 10 years, it's so severe that Peter Cooper Village, Stuyvesant Town, is nothing more than an NYU dorm or young people whose parents are paying their rent to live in apartments where families should live. The grounds are a disaster, a mess, filthy, dirty. Peter Cooper Village, Stuyvesant Town would rather spend their money on replanting trees and shrubbery that dies instead of having maintenance or staff to correct and fix things within the apartment. So from my view and many of my neighbors who I've known for many, many years, it's a huge disgrace, and mostly it's just extremely very sad, and it doesn't seem that there's going to be any outcome other than the buildings literally falling apart.
Lisa, I can say that you speak for a lot of people who are calling in right now. You know, my screener writes notes for each of the callers before we go to them, and a lot of people from Peter Cooper Village and Stuyvesant Town are calling to say similar things to you, both about the management and about the newer tenants compared to the older tenants. Is that just kind of human nature, that second part of it, to say, oh, young people today, they're not as pure and concerned citizens as we were? Or do you think something is really different?
I think it's a combination. I think that years back when MetLife owned this complex, you had to qualify to get in here. It wasn't a housing it wasn't. They weren't buildings that people could just move into. You know, they did a background check. They made sure that you were the right family to come in. And there were rules and regulations. Now there are no rules. And there's nobody caring for the complex. It used to be this beautiful place that people loved to walk around, look at the beautiful trees, admire, you know, the birds that lived here, the squirrels. And now nobody's managing it. Nobody owns it. That's the problem.
Lisa, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. So Charles Bagley, as a reporter, how much would you corroborate the things that Lisa has been saying?
Well, there's no doubt that the complex is changing. This was a place where they never saw a moving van. People who moved in stayed. They put down roots. Their kids played in the Little League. They attended the local schools. And today, it's a much more transient population. Now, I think some of that is the society. You know, people don't go to work for the same company for their entire working lives anymore. In the old days, you'd get a job at MetLife and stay there until you retired. And many of the workers at MetLife did live in Stuyvesant Town. And today, that's not the case. My own daughter's 31. She's on her third career. But at the same time, the pricing is also what's changing, what's going on here. The cost of the apartments, of these renovated apartments, is so high that a family of four could not live there and expect to raise their kids.
Charles Bagley, my guest on WNYC, talking about his new book on the decline of, or I should say on the sale of Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village, and all that flowed from it. Book is called Other People's Money. And somehow this is not a story of the demise of Tishman Speyer or their partner BlackRock. They're fine. How is that possible after such a spectacular failure?
Well, that's a good question. I think what the book reflects is this speculative era where Wall Street was like a casino. And as one of the bidders for the property said, you know, when he went to talk to the wizards on Wall Street, they basically told him, hey, the more you bid, the more we can lend you. So it fueled this speculative fever. And why was that? That was because the bankers were able to make a fee by selling the mortgage. They made another fee by combining the mortgage with other mortgages and then selling it, so it wasn't on their books. So whatever happened to the property didn't really matter.
Hence the title, Other People's Money.
Exactly.
They were playing with other people's money. So they're able to emerge essentially unharmed. So whose money was lost in this deal?
Well, a lot of pension fund money, starting with, of course, the biggest pension fund in the country, which is CalPERS in California, $500 million they put into this. And what's jarring about that is that they were investing in a business plan that was going to oust the very kind of people who are their pensioners.
And this is why the deal is the poster child of the housing crisis.
Well, not only for that, but just you had the Church of England that invested in this. You had the government of Singapore. I mean, this was an international phenomenon. And I think it's changing a lot of the cities in the country where we're – you know, we used to have people of all different incomes living here, and I think we're on the path towards what some people call the European model, exemplified by Paris, where the wealthy live inside the city limits and the working class and the immigrants are sort of pushed out to the suburbs.
But staying for a minute on whose money was lost, we know that CalPERS, the California Pension Fund, has been in serious trouble coming out of the recession and the financial crisis. Is it possible to quantify how much of a role in that this deal and their losses in it played?
Well, this was – for CalPERS, this was their second biggest real estate loss. They had also put $1 billion into a land deal in California that went sour within 12 months of their investing. So this was one of many deals that went haywire for them.
And a listener from Uptown on our comments page asks, from Upper Manhattan, says, was there no proof of fraud in this when Tishman sold this loser to CalPERS et al. That financed it? Is there any whiff of fraud in this?
Well, I don't know that there's fraud in the sort of legal sense of it. I mean, everything is disclosed. If you believe these numbers, then you'll believe anything. And what attracted the pension funds were the fact that they were offering 13.5% returns. It never quite worked out. But the pension funds were trying to make money so that they could cover the obligations that they had to their pensioners.
And basically Wall Street is all about leveraging other people's money, and nobody's in jail basically for the financial crisis.
That's right.
Nicole in Peter Cooper Village, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm a resident of Peter Cooper. I live there with my husband and my 16-month-old daughter, and we've been there for about 4 years. And the concept of people staying in the complex unless you are rent stabilized is virtually impossible because the rents literally go up daily. I mean, I just walked out of my building. I just told your screener I walked out of my building today, and they're construction crews are there demolishing a just renovated apartment, an apartment that was only renovated about, you know, within the last 5, maybe 8 years with granite countertops and lovely appliances, and they're gut renovating it to put in higher end appliances so that they can ask for even more money. So the churning of tenants, it continues. And just to speak to your previous caller who was a person who'd been there for many years and has much to say about new residents. I mean, I think the complex is lovely. It's beautiful when you walk around Peter Cooper Village in Stuytown. I grew up in Brooklyn, and my parents marvel when they come and they say it's like living in a park. So I think there is a little bit of tension sometimes between the longtime residents and the newer people, and I don't necessarily think that that, you know, should weigh the blame falls on the newer tenants.
By the way, What do you think about some of this newer tenant bashing? I mean, I'm just reading now from the notes from other callers who are not going to have time to put on the air. New young people are noisy, bad tenants. Another one, lived here since 77. New neighbors are disrespectful. And I could go on. So as a young mother who's only been there 4 years, do you feel that there's this generational or some other kind of tension?
You know, I think also I'd like to say it's also that people have such a sweet deal and they've had it for so long. I mean, we live in the corner. We live in where we have three tenants, three apartments around us, and all three are single women who are in their 70s and 80s, and they're lovely to us. But they've been living there for, one of them told me she was one of the original tenants. So they've been there for so many years. I think it's hard for them to see change. But, you know, having a dog, sometimes you have these longtime tenants who literally will, you know, yell at you because, you know, you have a dog, or, you know, you're taking up too much room in the elevator because you have a baby carriage, or, you know, whatever. I mean, these things are things that people just need to get used to. And
Nicole, you know, I really appreciate you calling. I appreciate all your thoughts on this. And Charles, I want to ask you about this whole ball of wax in the context of this year's mayoral race before we run out of time. But you look like you wanted to say something about Nicole.
Well, I think it's true. Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village, you've got maybe 25,000 people living there, and there's probably 25,100 opinions about what's happening. So there's huge debates about food trucks inside. There's huge debates about the green market. When they introduced the skating rink, there was a whole debate about that as well. And it comes from a bunch of places. I mean, there were people that were worried that the lights for the skating rink would be shining in their windows at night. They were worried that it would draw a lot of people from outside the complex inside the complex. Most of us would think at first, hey, what's the matter with a rink, a hockey rink or a skating rink? So I think it's a difficult place. There's a lot of opinions. But its importance to the city is what is changing here, and that is it's no longer a refuge for the middle class where people will set down roots because they just can't afford to do that.
So we're now fully immersed in the mayoral election of this year. In fact, I'm hosting a mayoral candidates forum next week on affordable housing. So what lessons do you think they should have learned from this particular tale? And what would you ask them if you were me?
That's a good question. I would wonder what they want to do, because this trend, the loss of affordable housing in New York City, is continuing. And it's not just the middle class, of course. There's a lot of immigrants that are doubled up and have no place to go. The mayor's got a very ambitious housing program. He's tried to preserve and build new housing, and that's terrific. But the rate of loss exceeds the gain. And I think this is an important issue for the city and in maintaining it. So, I mean, one question would have been, what would you do in 2006? The mayor decided to sit on the sidelines and let whatever happens, happens. I think he could have used his bully pulpit. He certainly uses it when he wants to discourage sugary drinks or cigarettes or guns, for that matter. Why not, if he had intervened in this and said, this is an important gem in the city's crown jewels, I think that MetLife should ask the new owners to preserve some percentage of units.
So it's not just when there's a housing slump. This story really implies the importance of good policy when there's a housing boom, because that's what really gave birth to this debacle.
Absolutely.
And we will leave it there with Charles Bagley, whose new book is called Other People's Money, Inside the Housing Crisis and the Demise of the Greatest Real Estate Deal Ever Made. Now the mayoral candidates have a little tip about one line of questioning we may get to at the Furman Center at NYU next Wednesday. Charles, good luck. And I see that you have a reading tonight. So listeners, if you want to meet Charles Bagley and keep talking about this and hearing about it, this is an open-to-the-public reading. Where else? The Stuyvesant Town Community Center. Oh, now you've got everybody juiced after all this. I think you'll have a turnout.
Be there, be square.
7 o'clock tonight at the Stuytown Community Center for Charles Bagley, reading from his new book, Other People's Money. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a very different kind of real estate conversation coming up next, a post-Sandy reckoning, some interesting new patterns that we're learning of developing for summer rental bookings at the Jersey Shore. Stay with us.